What's up, ladies and gentlemen? How you doing? Hope you're having a fantastic day so far, fantastic week. Thanks so much for tuning in to the 65th episode of the Footballer Journey podcast, where I, your host, Eric Friedlander, most of you probably know me as Rick Fit, interview other pro footballers to hear their day in the life and what they do behind the scenes on and off the field. Today, we got a special guest. His name is Miles Corbos. He's originally from New Jersey, signed a homegrown contract with the New York Red Bulls before making a move to the Wilmington Hammerheads in the USL. After a stint in the USL, he made a move to the third league in Germany with MSV Duisburg. After a successful stint there, he did a quick stint with SG Wattenscheid in the fourth league of Germany, where he said he has developed himself a lot as a footballer, especially in a tactical sense, before he made the move to where he's at now in the second league in the Netherlands with the Go Ahead Eagles. For all you center midfielders, this is a very, very good conversation for you. I am sure you'll learn a lot. Obviously, whatever position you play, you will learn a lot. But get that notepad out, take some notes, and I'll see you at the end. Enjoy. Hey, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, man?
Thanks for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, no problem. I hope this is working. I've never done this before, so I don't know if I could do it from my laptop, but for now I'm just holding my phone.
Yeah, it's all good. You can place it down, but... You're not much into the IG, huh? Better off without it.
No, I've been trying to limit it recently, but no, I wouldn't say I'm not into it. I just have never done an Insta Live, yeah. And I'm trying to limit it recently. My usage on that stuff.
I hear you, bro. I hear you. But yeah, man, good to have you on. If you could just introduce yourself real quick. You know your name, where you're from. Where you're currently playing, and then I want to get into a bit of your journey. I saw you've had quite a journey, so it'd be nice to talk about it.
Yeah, so I'm Miles Corbos, 26, originally from, well, I was born in Alabama, grew up in New Jersey. I played for, at the time it was NJSA, then went to New York Red Bull Academy for my last U18 year. Then I went to Rutgers University for two seasons and then transferred to the University of Maryland for my last two seasons. So that's kind of my initial journey, I guess I would say.
Yeah, solid, bro, solid. And then So what made you kind of transfer from Rutgers to Maryland? Was it football-based, academic, or everything included?
I mean, it was pretty soccer-based, right? I'm not gonna lie. I mean, it happened to be that Maryland, I was studying engineering, so Maryland also had a great engineering program. So in the end, it was, I think it was a net plus on the soccer end and the academic end. But no, I chose Rutgers initially. I had a fair amount of choices, and I chose Rutgers because I felt the real trust of the coaches there, which I did get. And I thought they were going to build something special. Unfortunately, after two seasons, I didn't really like where the program was necessarily headed, or I didn't really have the belief that it would turn in my final 2 years. And I had opportunities to go elsewhere, and some of the schools I was looking at before, like Georgetown, were interested again, and Maryland came into the picture as well, which I wasn't recruited to from high school. So that was kind of, you know, I guess in a way a testament to what I was able to do at Rutgers with that trust that I had gotten in the first two seasons, and then I chose to go to Maryland, and it ended up going well. It worked out. Had a great experience there, different type of culture, some great players. So that was definitely a positive choice.
No, like you said, man, I think it's huge having the trust and belief in the coaching staff, because as we both know, one of the biggest things as a footballer is your confidence, and having that trust allows you to actually express yourself.
Yep, for sure. That's huge. The mental aspect of the game is, and I'm still learning things at age 26. The mental aspect of the game is huge. Like, everyone can have a great game or a great stretch of games, but how do you kind of unlock that mindset on a consistent basis that allows you to perform at that level? Because it's a very fragile thing. And having the coach's confidence is, that's one of the easiest ways to get that confidence and to play well consistently.
So after Maryland, how'd the journey kind of go? Did you get drafted, or what happened after that?
No, so I had gone through the Red Bull Academy long enough that I was a homegrown prospect for them. And they offered me a homegrown contract during my senior year at Maryland, my senior season. And I graduated in the winter after 3.5 years and signed there. So I didn't really have the option to go to the draft. Looking back, maybe it would have been better to go to the draft and somehow go to the draft and go to a team who actually, you know, needed somebody in my position. But, you know, back then, it's easier now to say, but back then I was more than excited to sign for Red Bull, and I was kind of optimistic about what might happen. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, and then made my way over to Wilmington with the idea already that I would have a trial in Germany in that summer or after the season. So that's kind of how everything ties together.
Yeah, I want to ask you a couple of things about the Red Bulls. I mean, first of all, we know it's a fantastic organization. I mean, even European listeners, I'm sure they know, but if you can kind of describe, like, to European listeners, people from Asia, who don't know what a homegrown contract is, if you could just, you know, talk about what that is, kind of.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I'm not the most educated on the subject either, and I don't know if things have changed since then, but basically, if you played for the academy, and in my case, I played U18, then I went to college or university, and I still played every summer for the U23 team. So at that point, I guess it's to protect the club's interests in terms of forming players, or like educating players, or, you know, that they get more or less first, they get the first rights on those players. So they get the choice. For example, if Red Bull had said, no, we don't want him, we don't want to sign him, then I would have been free to enter the draft. So as soon as, from what I understand, if they offer you a contract, you don't really have a choice. Maybe you can negotiate and find a way to get out of it, but then another club has to pay for your rights or something like that. So that's also complicated, you know? I understand the concept of it, and I mean, to protect the clubs and their investment in young players, but I'm not saying this is why it didn't work out, but I'm kind of proof of how the players don't really get protected in the end.
Sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, no, given my college career, I think I would have, through the draft, been able to land in a place maybe where I could have had more of an impact.
No, for sure. It's interesting, because, and I wonder, like you said, if the rules have changed. I'm not really up to date on American soccer myself, but you know, like you said, it's obviously kind of protecting the club, and at the end of the day, football is a business. But it's like, shouldn't we look more about player development? And I think from a European standpoint, I think the mindset could be a little different. But like you said, it's interesting, but. I mean, all in all, I mean, I know Red Bulls is a great setup. How was your experience overall through the academy and through the U23s?
It was great. The academy was great. I mean, there are a ton of players that come out of that academy, so it speaks for itself. It also speaks to the the region, the New York, New Jersey, even Connecticut area. You have so many good players, some guys from Pennsylvania as well, coming out of that area. It's really a soccer hotbed, and I think Red Bull, at least when I was there, Red Bull got first dibs on those players. So, yeah, they won a few national championships, I think, the year after I left, stuff like that. And now you see a ton of homegrowns breaking through to the first team. So, yeah, my experience with Red Bull was great. Even coming back this summer, it was kind of like, because at Maryland, most of the players stay there in the summer, so I would stay there and we had to, pick up games and stuff like that. But it was basically like whenever you want to come train with Red Bull or train with the U23s or play games with the 23s, that's fine. So it was kind of the ideal setup for me at the time.
For sure. And obviously, since you've been in Europe for quite some time now and you obviously have the experience at Red Bull, what would you say that – would you say it's kind of similar to European setup, how they run the club?
I can't really answer that because I'm not very familiar with the European youth setup. True. Even here and in Germany, like, I wasn't very involved with the youth teams, so I don't want to say anything that's not true. Having said that, I think within the scope of what, like, an American lifestyle enables – it is pretty similar. Well, they try to duplicate what the European academies do within that limited scope of what they're allowed to do.
For sure.
For example, I think a lot of youth academies here in Europe, you kind of just live there and you can train twice a day and you go to school kind of in between. Or when you're 16, you stop going to school. And in the U.S., obviously, that's not really possible. Most guys finish high school because the idea is ultimately, or for most people, and this is less and less true, but for most people, the idea is to go to college after and get a university education. So you don't really have that luxury, that soccer luxury of saying at 16, no, I'm done, and I'm just going to play soccer every day, all day, you know? So I think within the limits of the American system, yeah, they do a pretty good job kind of replicating what the European system does.
For sure. So yeah, like you said, you went after to Wilmington, and then would you play a couple of games there? And then were they kind of connected with the team that you signed with in Germany, or how did that kind of go?
Yeah, so I went to went to Wilmington with the idea. I kind of saw, okay, other MLS teams aren't really interested right now. It doesn't really look good, you know, when you get offered to the second team at Red Bull, and I didn't want to do that because I didn't like how everything went down from the meeting I had my senior year to when they told me, yeah, you're going to be more of a second team player. That wasn't really I wasn't too happy with that. So I didn't want to sign with Red Bull too. And then there wasn't concrete interest from any first team MLS teams. So then it was USL, you know? And so we were looking at USL teams, and then this more or less project got introduced to me that I could go to Wilmington. And initially it was to get a trial at the end of the season, which would be in November, December at MSV Duisburg, because the owner has some connection there. I don't know exactly what his title is in Germany and everything. So I was like, yeah, you know what, let's do this. I have a French passport, so that was always kind of in my mind. And I was like, yeah, let's go for it. At this point, I had nothing to lose. I'm not afraid of a challenge, and I'm not afraid of going elsewhere. So I took the chance, and I played, I think, almost 20 games with Wilmington, and some good games as well in the cup against Real Salt Lake and stuff like that. So it went well, and then the opportunity to trial, well, actually, Duisburg around the same time got relegated from second Bundesliga to third Bundesliga. So then it became even more interesting to bring in a player that nobody really knew. So I went to trial there end of June, early July.
At this point?
I was 21.
So,
yeah, so that was 6 months after I graduated college. So yeah, I got a trial at Duisburg, and at the end of the summer, signed there.
So, and how would you kind of compare the level of, you know, USL that you saw to three Liga at that time?
At the time, the third division in Germany was much better. I don't know. Like I said, it's been 4 or 5 years. I can't say what the level's like now in USL, and also I can't say what the level's like in third division now. Although I do watch once in a while, but at the time, yeah, it was much. I liked it a lot more because it was much more thought out. It was much more technical. From a tactical aspect, like coming to Europe opened a new world to me, and I came through the Red Bull system. So, yeah. Although with the first team, I did learn a lot tactically with Red Bull, but in a different way. So the tactical aspect was huge when I came to Europe and learning about that. Duisburg was also, I think we were first the whole season that year. So that wasn't the typical third division team. But yeah, the level was definitely better than USL at the time, yeah.
For sure. And yeah, man, I read like two or three interviews before we hopped on this morning. And like you said, I read that you said that you got so much better tactically and it opened new doors. What would you say, like, kind of the difference in mindset? Because I'm all with you there. Like, you know, I also played in Germany and a couple other countries, but the build up in Germany and the patience on the ball and,
Yeah.
you know, the overall how those players think is just another level, you know. Like
Yeah. Yeah.
you can go to a park over there and you see a guy, he looks like he's 15, 20 kilos overweight, and your first instinct would be like, no way, no chance he could
Yeah.
bowl, you know. You start playing a bit of pickup and this guy's pinging, you know, he's in the right spot,
Yeah.
so it says a lot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, the patience on the ball is what impressed me first. Like you had outside backs getting all the way forward. If it's not on, no problem. We bring it back, we swing it around, we go out the other side. And that was the thing, at least when I was there in the USL, it just didn't exist. You would basically, if you were that high up on the field, you would go for your chances. You would, you know, try something that didn't really make sense with maybe a 7% percent chance of like succeeding, but you know, that's what it was. Yeah, the other thing I learned a lot was like the different systems, you know, just playing out of the back, the 2v1s, the 3v2s, like the numbers games, and also the idea of playing passes, not necessarily to beat guys or anything, but just to move the defense, just kind of move them, see what they do, see how they react. And at some point, and I still believe this now, like you move a team around, even what looks like to the normal fan useless passes, like 5 5-yard passes. You see a lot of teams doing this, Barcelona, or at the time when Verratti was playing with Thiago Motta at PSG, they would do this all the time. You just move. At some point, the defense gets tired, they get lazy. One guy's too late, and that's where you break the lines. And those were things that I'd never really thought about. In the US, or maybe I was doing them, or maybe we were doing them, but it wasn't very conscious. And now I mean, in Germany, every pass has an idea. And so that was, you know, like I said, eye-opening for me. And also at the time, I was playing in the sixth position, so building up out of the back was huge, like tiny things that really I'd never thought of before. It made me seem really stupid at the time, but you know, when you're building out with three and the six drops in between the two center backs. And you see you're in trouble. As a six, I had the tendency to drop even further back to see if I could get the ball. But really what I'm doing is taking space away from the goalkeeper. So in that case, just run forward, bring the defender with you, and the goalie gets the ball and he has time and you can start again. You know, things like that. Looking back, I was really uneducated in the tactical aspect.
No, it's unbelievable. And like you said, man, it's those little details. And at the next level, you know, speed of play obviously increases, so you don't have as much time, as much space. So those little details are huge, especially as a number six trying to dictate the game.
Yeah, and they become automatic. And when they become automatic, then it goes much, much faster, and you don't have to think as much. But the initial idea behind it is important before you accept that.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. So what do you say? Are you playing as a number eight now, or are you still playing as a number six?
So last season I played more as an eight. This season we have a new coach. Bit different. I'm playing kind of as a 10 the last few games. So that's a bit different for me. But I'm enjoying it. I think it just adds to the diversity or the versatility in my game. So if I can learn how to, you know, pick up little things, receiving the ball with my back to the goal, with my back to defenders, is something I'm not used to. I've been playing with the field in front of me my whole career. So if I can learn that, then definitely just adds an aspect to my game that I didn't have before.
No,
I see some clowns asking questions here from my team. I can answer.
We can answer at the end. Or if you want, we can answer them now. How do you take a perfect corner?
It's my teammate being a joke. No, don't worry. Just ignore him.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. But yeah, I mean, I forgot what I was going to say. But yeah, I had two questions. I mean, the first thing, I think, like you said there, I mean, you know, just being able, and like you said, I want to cover it about, you know, talk about young players, because I get the question a lot. You know, I'm a number eight. My coach put me at right back. What do I do? This and that.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said right there is a perfect example. Like I always talk about, it's like as footballers, as athletes, I think the better you can adapt, the better you will be and the better your success will be. And like you said, you look at it right there, you look at it as a positive, like, oh yeah, you're playing number 10 now, so you'll be able to play better with guys on your back, and that adds to your game. And just being able to figure that out is huge, and it just adds extra attributes and extra assets to your game. Yeah. And, you know, it's – what do you – like, for players, you know, who are – they get put in different positions – what would you say is like a kind of a tip or something you would advise, you know, when you get put out of position, quote unquote?
Yeah, I think it's definitely important when you're young, because by playing another position, you understand that position. So you understand in what situations that position or that player wants the ball,
sure.
What types of spaces are open from that point of view. So you just learn more. I see it as like you complete more of your tactical knowledge because you've experienced that type of position. The other thing is you can also improve aspects of your game that you've never had to work on. Like I never really had to, I don't know, like receive a ball where I'm really my back to the game. You know, I'm always more side on or already facing forward as a six or an eight. And in this case, it's really sometimes you know, people tell you to open up earlier, but sometimes it's not really possible. So you're really receiving that ball and your turn is different. All sorts of things are different. So you add technical aspects as well as tactical aspects to your game, I think. Yeah, it depends how old you are too, right? So if you're young, then it's really just a learning experience and you can really get lost in that learning experience. Whereas if you're, you know, my age, it's good to learn something new, but maybe you can't show yourself as much as you'd like to in that moment. So I think it's definitely important for young players to experience as much as they can different positions before really specializing in one position.
Absolutely, man. And I think what you said there is key, that, you know, obviously you have in your subconscious mind, but I've never heard before, like being able to, you know, see what another guy feels or another guy sees when he gets the ball in a certain pocket, a certain space, a certain spot on the field. And you have the ability to kind of, you were in his shoes at one point, so you know what he wants. And for the most part.
Yeah. You also understand, like, you know, there's a lot of intangibles in football. So like what looks easy for a center back is actually not that easy on the ball because there's a high risk. Right, so you're talking about like guys on the sixth position or a center back receiving a ball, telling them to turn and all this. If you haven't played there, you can't really know what type of risk is going through their mind in that moment. So those are also things that, you know, I think a lot of spectators or people watching, just watching games, can't really understand.
For sure.
And it, you know, at the highest level, those things don't really matter. But, you know, it is a different type of you play differently when you're the last man on the field or when you're all the way up in the attacking third. So those are things that you can't really experience. If you're a striker your whole life, you can't really experience why the center back doesn't turn there, why the six doesn't turn and play out the other way. So that sort of thing is important, I think.
No, exactly.
And honestly, even touching back to what we said in the beginning of the conversation, what you said about how important the mental aspect of the game is, it's as simple as that. Like, you know, you got fans, you got armchair quarterbacks watching matches. If a center back, you know, he tries to play a ball through and it gets intercepted, you have guys go, oh, it's an easy ball, this and that. But you don't know what was actually going through his mind if you've never been in that position played at that level, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's just a testament to how good the guys actually are when you watch Champions League games and they're doing these amazing things. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I could probably do that too. And you get in the field and you're like, okay. Everything's 10 times faster on the field than when you're watching from the outside. And So it's always easier to criticize from the outside, but I think there's a lot more going on the field than people think. And, you know, that's the nature of the game. And then I have no problem with that, but I'm just saying it's a different experience.
For sure. So, how long did you spend at Duisburg before moving over to Holland?
Well, I was at Duisburg for a season and a half. And then I wasn't playing. So I went down to the fourth division for a team called Wattenscheid for another year and a half. And I learned a lot there too. That was where I really learned how much, or I really realized how much you can learn by just playing. I'd gone through a time in Duisburg where I wasn't playing a lot. And then you go and you play every game and you learn so much just through experience, through recognizing patterns, seeing plays over and over and over again, and having the solution. By the end, you already have the solution for it, you know. So I was there for a year and a half. So in total, I was in Germany for 3 years. And then I got the opportunity to come to Holland to go ahead Eagles. And that was a great move for me.
Kannst du Deutsch sprechen?
Yeah.
Good. But yeah, so how was the transition over to Holland? Because I'm sure the football is a little bit similar, Germany and Holland.
It's pretty different actually. Especially I'm playing second division, so you have a lot of young players, and it's more about like educating these players and selling them, or that they move up to the first division and then they get sold. So there's definitely a lot more risk. There's a lot more playing out of the back. There's a lot more, to be honest, it's very different. It's much more attacking. You see many more, like, I think this season there have already been like two games that were like 6-4 and one game that was 7-3, like scores that you would never see in Germany.
Just like in the Prem, you know?
Yeah, but it's not so, it is kind of back and forth as well, but just a lot higher risk. Also different, the 4-3-3 here is huge. There's countless differences, but for sure, more similar, the German-Dutch aspect is more similar than I would say my American to German change.
For sure. So, if you could just kind of take listeners through like a typical day in your life, when you wake up, what you usually have for breakfast and how it works throughout your day, like just a little behind the scenes of what you do throughout the day.
Like I said, this season we have a different coach. So we're actually at the training facility a lot longer than last season, I would say. But for me, I normally wake up at 7, I don't really sleep very late, so 7 is perfect for me. I have my morning routine for about an hour and a half. I'll make my way over to the stadium where we train for at around like 8:30.
What's your kind of morning routine consist of, just to give some young guys practical stuff?
Yeah, the usual stuff. Go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, and then I like to try to do some meditation for, you know, as well as it goes for that day. So sometimes that's 5 minutes, sometimes that's 20 minutes, it depends. Then I like to think of it as my extended meditation, but I like to make a coffee and I like to read my book, which I think is a huge part of just my overall education or life experience, because I think it's a huge part of what I do. And then that's basically it. Then it's time to get dressed, go to training. Like I said, I'm there around 8:30. Last year we had breakfast at the club, but this season with the COVID financial stuff, the breakfast got cut. So sometimes I'll eat at home. Sometimes I won't eat before training. It kind of depends on our week schedule that day. I like to fast before training around twice a week. And then, so we have video, we have meetings from 9 to 10:15, I want to say, or kind of, you know, whatever you need to do to get ready for training. And then 10:30 we train. Depending on the day, we have a weightlifting session and then a session on the field, or vice versa. And then the rest is kind of, you know, training until we train for a long time, like 2 hours or something. And then it's kind of optional if you want to stay in the weight room or whatever. Then we have a lunch that's, you know, not optional, but kind of like you go in whenever you want, have lunch, and then treatment or weightlifting or extra session if you need it. And then, yeah. So normally I'm there at 8:30. I probably get home around, I want to say 3:30, depending on the day, how much I have to do, but that's pretty normal to be home around 3:30. And then it's just relax. Like I said, I read a lot, or I'll go to the city, go to a cafe or something. And now it's difficult with the whole COVID stuff, so that doesn't happen too often. And then dinner around 6, and normally after dinner I have a lot of, you know, FaceTime with the family or with my girlfriend who still lives in Germany, and that sort of thing.
How would you say the training sessions differ from Germany to Holland?
They're not that different, to be honest. Yeah, okay, maybe in terms of like the weekly plan, it's a bit different. When I was in Germany, I was used to having tough training. So for example, if you play on Saturday, Tuesday would be 2-a-days. Wednesday would still be pretty tough. Thursday would be tactics light, and Friday would be almost nothing. And then Saturday game, Sunday training for the guys who didn't play, Monday off, whatever. And now it's now we work at this club. We work a lot with we work with a sports scientist who does a lot based on numbers. So we really do a lot. Like the loads are heavy all week. Friday is lighter, and then Saturday would be the game. But I was not used to training so hard Thursday, Friday before a game. But now, I mean, after a year, your body gets used to it. But in terms of weekly plan, it's definitely different. What we do in training, it really depends on the coach. Like we had a coach last year who was pretty a lot based on fun and a lot of, you know, some simple stuff. And then this year we have a lot of tactics. Every type of drill is thought of beforehand, you know, like how do you want to, what do we want to work on this year based this week based on the opponent we're going to play on Saturday, and that sort of thing. So that really depends on the coach. That's all I could say between Germany and Holland. You know, I only had 2 coaches in Germany, and now I've had 2 in Holland. So,
yeah. No, that also, that periodization model is interesting. What do you, overall, what would you say you feel better with as a player and within the body?
That's a tough one. at the beginning when I first got here, I definitely felt better with the lighter load right before the game. I was used to the German way. And I also liked that it was light enough that I could do a lot of individual training. I like to train a lot, so I like to do a lot of individual stuff. And in Holland, when you're kind of like, when you're kind of dead or you're gassed, you know, you can't really do much. You can't really do much on your own after training. Otherwise, you're just going to be dead in the game.
Yeah, like you said, you do some extra individual stuff and you like to. What type of stuff do you, obviously with the different periodization scheme, you probably have adjusted it, but what type of additional stuff do you like to do throughout the week, technical, physical stuff?
Yeah, it's mostly technical. So the physical stuff is kind of taken, in my opinion, we do enough with the club. We have like weightlifting sessions three times a week. So, technical stuff, I like to do a lot of like just basic technical work. I think that's important for when you get on the field, that stuff kind of comes automatically when you don't have time to think.
For sure.
So just a lot of basic dribbling skills, stuff like that. Otherwise, mm-hmm. You know, hitting some long balls, just making sure that's sharp, or hitting some free kicks and making sure they're sharp. But, the rest is really just a lot of technical stuff. I like to stay sharp with that, yeah.
For sure. And how often do you like to incorporate that during the season?
It depends on the week. Like, if I'm really dead, then I have to shut it down. I had an injury last year. I had a stress fracture in my ankle. Mm. And that kind of calmed me down in terms of just, like, going through, you know, like, going through pain. Or, you know, I had to relax on that end. So this season's a bit different. If I'm tired, if I'm really tired, I have to be sensible and call it a day. But that type of like technical muscle memory stuff, I'll try to do maybe 2 to 3 times a week. I should probably do it more, but realistically, it's been 2 to 3 times a week after training these past few weeks.
Yeah, and like you said, man, I think it's huge just listening to your body. And obviously, like you said, it differs week to week and based on when your match is.
Yeah, yeah. That's huge. This week we have 3 games, so
wow.
I'm doing nothing. So there's no muscle memory going on this week. Just little things, yeah, training, and then that's it.
Yeah. So what type of stuff you guys incorporate in the gym?
So let's say on Tuesday, is it Tuesday, Wednesday? It's either Tuesday, Wednesday, or Monday, Tuesday. We these German guys, they gotta stop, man. So Monday, Tuesday we'll do like, to be honest, I don't know exactly what we do, but we work like more or less the front of our legs one day. So more quads and I guess that would be what, like vertical motion? I don't know. And then the next day will be more the backside and horizontal for sure. Motion. So we have a weightlifting session, lower body on that Monday or Tuesday. And then we'll go outside and do sprints or jumps and that sort of thing. And then we'll have training. And then we'll have the day after a game, upper body lift. And 2 days before the game, upper body lift. Yeah. So that would be, in this case, let's say a Sunday and a Thursday. Mm-hmm. So four sessions a week, I guess, which is more than I've ever had with a team.
For sure. No, I mean, it seems like the Dutch like to lift more than the Germans and most others. How do you feel with that, you know, doing those lifts during the season?
Yeah, I mean, I feel fine. I can't say if I really feel a difference. The upper body stuff I would, try to do on my own if we didn't have it with the team, and the lower body stuff I've tried to incorporate, in the past. I wasn't as consistent as I would have liked to have been. 'Cause I think it's important for injury prevention, and also, I think just as a soccer player, especially in midfield, if you can be strong on your legs, it's so important. It's just really hard to train that on your own out of the structure of a team and then be performing well at training and be fit on game day. So it's nice that they kind of take that into hand here with the club.
Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you have a lot of games, and obviously I'm sure with the COVID schedules are condensed. You said you do meditation. Do you do any other recovery methods, any yoga, ice baths, things like that?
Yeah, so my my girlfriend's a yoga instructor, so she's kind of gotten me into it. Yeah, in the summer I was doing it every day, and then I actually got injured, so it kind of scared me. It was just, you know, I was coming back from a long injury, and I started up too fast, and I pulled up with a muscle injury, so... Looking back, it had nothing to do with the yoga. But at the time, I was like, okay, I can't do yoga if I have a pulled quad. So I stopped that, and I'd never really picked it up after the injury because I was still hesitant. Now I'm incorporating it back in the past 2 weeks, and then this week we have three games this week. So if I do some yoga, it'll be probably tomorrow, but like super light because I'm not a big yogi and I don't want to add a new load to my body on a week where you have three games. But yeah, yoga I would definitely like to do more consistently, ideally every day in the morning. To some extent, it doesn't even have to, in my opinion, it doesn't have to be an hour or 40 minutes. It could be 15, 20 minutes of just like waking up your body and getting ready for the day. But other than that, no, the meditation definitely for the mental aspect. Yoga for the body, and that's really it. Yeah, in terms of recovery, you know, a good diet, a lot of water, and that type of stuff.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think, you know, I think yoga is huge, man. It just like it incorporates the meditation, the breath work, and the mindfulness with movement. So it's you know, being able to incorporate it's huge.
Yeah, meditation seems so much more satisfying too after yoga. So sure. I definitely feel the effects of that. Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, man, two more questions and then I'll let you go. But first one I would say is, with the knowledge you have today, is there any age that you would go back to and kind of, you know, make a different decision with where you're at? And obviously it's tough. Like we said, you know, it's tough looking back and saying you want to change things because obviously generally everything happens for a reason, but if you were to, like, for example, give any youngsters, like, you know, instead of playing FIFA for 5 hours at 16, I should have been training extra ball work, you know, something like that, you know?
Paul, that's a tough one because, like you say, it's, if I did something differently, then I wouldn't be here. I don't know where I would have been. So it's hard to say. I would definitely say, even especially at a young age, actually work as hard as you can with the ball, because that type of technical base is something it's harder to lose. You can lose it, I guess, but it's harder to lose. And also at that age, you know, between, let's say, 12 and 16 is when you kind of pick up the most, your body picks up the most muscle memory, is more ready to adopt that type of stuff. So that's the age where you can make leaps and bounds technically. And, yeah, you can still do it at my age even, I think, but it's more to stay sharp or to stay in the right mindset than to really make gains. And to be honest, I did that well in high school. I had a pretty crazy training schedule, but so I did do a good job at that. But in other things, what could I have done differently? Yeah, there's a lot. I'm like any person. I've made mistakes. I've made big mistakes. Sure. I just got to learn from them. Like, I don't know. I've done some dumb stuff, but
who hasn't, honestly?
Yeah. So, no, just work hard. That's the main thing. Work hard. There are going to be setbacks. The mental side comes in huge when those setbacks come. And something I'm still working on is just trying to stay level-headed and not, after a good game, not think you're that good. And after a bad game, not think, oh, fuck, I have no future here. Because those are the ups and downs of soccer and a soccer career. And I think as long as you can stay level-headed and stay on the same path, that those long-term gains will happen.
And like you said, I wanted to also ask you, you know, you said you're a big reader. What are you reading now? And then what would be like two of your favorite books to recommend to people?
That's really tough. I read everything. Like I read a lot of sports autobiographies, which would probably speak more to the audience now, but I like to read a lot of philosophy. I also like to read a lot of stuff like Yuval Harari, that's type of nonfiction as well. So I've really read a lot of different genres. Definitely so many books I still want to read, but having a look at my bookcase right now, what did I really like? Yeah, so what helped me with soccer, for example, is the book Flow. So the mental aspect of Flow was great for me, and I kind of knew going in what the book would be about, but it was still great, and it just coincided with a period I think where I was playing really well. So I don't know if that's a coincidence. Other than that. Let me think. Flow, and I'll pick something from, well, any Malcolm Gladwell book is pretty good in
Also.
my opinion. There's a yeah another good one is a book called Mastery by Robert Greene.
Yes, love that one.
That was really good. Have you read it, Mastery?
What is it? Body Mind Master? Is that what it is, or?
No, it's this guy Robert Greene. He writes a lot of nonfiction books. He wrote a book with
Oh, Art
50.
of War, right? As well.
Yeah, exactly. Art of War and
Yeah.
the 48 Laws of Power, and he wrote a book called Mastery. That was really good. Otherwise, like philosophy-wise, any book by Camus is really good, which I'm kind of reading a lot of at the moment. So. Yeah, I don't know. There's a ton of books. I can't say there's one favorite, but I think reading is a huge aspect of life. I think you can learn a lot, life-wise, and also in terms of your career. I think there's a lot of lessons there.
Absolutely. And yeah, let's just end off with, you know, two of your top tips to any footballer looking to sign their, you know, a professional contract or stay in the game and get their next contract, you know, two of your top tips, would you say?
Yeah, something that's not so easy, but really trusting the process, so to speak. So to speak in cliches is just work hard, do the right things every day, and it might not pay off right away, but really, there's no other point to life other than trusting that process and hoping that one day it falls your way.
For
So
sure.
that's a big one, and it's not always easy because you, like I said previously, you go through ups and downs and stuff like that. But that's a big one, might be the biggest. And then, yeah, I think in terms of soccer, just remember it's just a game, right? So don't
Absolutely.
take yourself too seriously. It kind of goes hand in hand with leveling off the highs and lows. There are more important things, and I think sometimes it helps people who are very intense to understand that and to recognize that. Maybe it's the other way around for people who don't take it seriously enough. So it's obviously dependent on the person, but yeah.
Absolutely. And like you said before, I mean, you were talking about not to get too high on a high game and not to get too low on a low game. It's like you said, man, it's the same thing in life. There's always going to be ups and downs, and just being able to take that throughout your life, I think, is huge, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, soccer is a great metaphor for life, in my opinion. So many aspects of it, anyway.
But yeah, man, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate you taking time, especially in a heavy game week.
No
Uh,
problem.
wish wish you the best of luck, man, and stay safe and healthy out there.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for having me on. And I wish you all the best with this podcast journey and your soccer career. And yeah.
For sure, brother. Appreciate you. Have a good one. All
Yeah, you too, man. Have a nice
right.
evening.
You too,
Bye-bye.
brother. Peace.
Hope you guys and girls enjoyed the podcast. Like I said, I really, really appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate all your support on every piece of content that I put out, on every single platform that I put it out. Like I always talk about, I just want to make you the best footballer, the best athlete, and the best human possible. If you enjoyed the podcast, I would really appreciate it if you left the podcast a review on Apple iTunes. Really helps grow the podcast so I can help other footballers out on their journey to become a professional and improve their life. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll drop Miles' details in the description. If you want to reach out to him, if you have any questions, I'm sure he'll be glad to answer. Have a good rest of the day. Talk soon.